dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. I'm thrilled to be able to present to you another tour of the battle space of the war for the free world, as we think of it here, with my colleague in our first segment, Fred Grandy, former member of Congress, a talk radio show professional, among many other parts. Now an executive vice president of the Center for Security Policy, I'm very happy to say, and a weekly contributor to our sort of end-of-the-week wrap-up. And Fred, one of the things that I've considered to be a high point of the week, we devoted much of the show to yesterday, as you know, is the Sharia War on Women initiative that we rolled out. You were at the press conference where we presented the ShariaWarOnWomen.org as a website and had remarkable speeches by three women who have been in this fight. What's your takeaway from that effort and why it's so needed at the moment?
Well, I think one of the most important things is that we had two women who have lived under Sharia law, Noni Darwish and Cynthia Farahat, both originally from the Middle East, and had firsthand reports of what it means to be a woman in those countries and how, and this is a quote from Cynthia, that they are treated like livestock property and have no rights whatsoever. But then that was accompanied by Karen Lugo, who of course is an attorney in this country and has been obviously arguing in behalf of women who have seen their rights compromised in courts in this country because they have not been able to get property settlements or divorce settlements or even gain custody of their children from men who have used Islamic jurisprudence in United States courts to wrest control away from these women. So what Noni and Cynthia both said about coming to this country to get away from Sharia and now being somewhat horrified to find it following them here is unfortunately, I think, becoming true.
I guess one of the things that I was so struck by, both in the press event we did on Thursday and in the comments made by several of these women on the show yesterday, Fred Grandy, was that this can happen in countries like ours. They described how they've witnessed it in Egypt, where, as you say, Noni Darwish and Cynthia Farahat hail from. Karen pointed out what's been happening in Europe, and indeed, as you say, that in our courts and in civil society institutions and even in our government, we've seen the insinuation of this Sharia business. The subject, of course, of a course on the subject that we have produced at MuslimBrotherhoodInAmerica.com. You know, this is particularly striking, Fred, this idea that all of that is being enabled by Barack Obama and his administration at the very moment when we're hearing so much about the war on women, the war on women. They seem to be neglecting this very real and very material war on women.
Well, obviously the war on women is in the eye of the beholder, and to the Obama administration, that is essentially a target with a bunch of Republicans in the bullseye because they are refusing to fund his programs with entitlements for contraception and programs on women's health. But if you want to talk about women's health, talk about honor killings. Yesterday you pointed out that Frank Wolf, who unfortunately is something of a lone wolf in this matter, is asking through the Appropriations Committee to at least track the honor violence that's going on in this country. These can be killings, these can be beatings, they can be the kind of female circumcision that we're finding to our horror in this country, and yet nobody in this administration and precious few in Congress are even paying attention to this. It's widespread in Europe already, practically. basically an epidemic.
Yeah. Circumcision is a pretty highfalutin word for it. Genital mutilation, I think, is a more accurate depiction, as you know. Fred Grandy is our guest with the Center for Security Policy now. In this regard, Fred, there is a report out of Reuters that ran yesterday that describes how, as the header put it, Afghan women fade from White House focus as exit nears. And this long piece is really describing quite, I think, painfully how women of Afghanistan who were given an opportunity, notably under President Bush, to liberate themselves from this horrifically repressive Sharia program are basically now being told, don't get in the way of our exit strategy. We're going to throw you to, speaking of wolves, the wolves of the Taliban all over again. This is another example of President Obama's seeming indifference to the plight of women under Sharia, and I have the feeling it's going to be one of those legacies that will haunt us for a long time to come.
Well, unfortunately, women in Afghanistan apparently are now beginning to suffer the same fate as American soldiers in Afghanistan, and they're having the rules of engagement dictated by their enemies. In this case, it's the Taliban, but I mean, just this morning, there's an AP story that says another Taliban dressed as an Afghan soldier shot and killed the 20th American soldier, and that's all because we are trying to do deals with the Taliban, and they are mocking us with this kind of violence. They have essentially been doing this to women for generations, and of course, it's almost worse in Pakistan, where the blasphemy laws are in effect, and you can actually be killed for these kinds of things and stoned to death. But the real irony here is supposedly the Democratic Party, and certainly this president, who makes such a thing out of being an advocate for women and the oppressed, could care less about women, and so could the National Organization of Women and most of these advocacy groups that aren't uttering a single syllable about what is happening to these women in Afghanistan and elsewhere under Sharia.
We had a very interesting conversation with Cynthia Farahat about that yesterday, and I think the point is so well taken. Fred, speaking of the lone wolf, my own congressman, Frank Wolf, as you were a moment ago, calls to mind a very important initiative on the Hill this week, on the House side of the Hill at least, with respect to this business about sequestration and the very draconian cuts on top of those that have already been made that would be imposed on the Defense Department and the United States Armed Forces unless there's some relief. The Republican-led House, with some Democratic support, has in fact sought to provide that relief. As a former denizen of those quarters, tell us what's likely to happen here. Are we in fact going to be seeing the Defense Department, the national security capabilities of the United States spared the meat axe that might be otherwise coming their way?
Well, unfortunately, the vote, which I think was 218 to 199, and actually there were about 16 Republicans who could not even bring themselves to support the cuts, and they were all in entitlement programs like Medicaid and food stamps, which of course have become horrifically bloated.
These are the means that were being identified to pay for the sparing of the cuts in the Defense Department. Go ahead, sorry.
But of course, all this would really do is just stem the growth of these shibboleths that you know our Democrats worship at. But unfortunately, even though the attempt to restore some funding to the military, which is we say many times on this program and elsewhere, is 20% of the budget, but sustaining currently 50% of the cuts, it's going to go nowhere in the Senate, certainly in this session. And it won't be until the Republicans actually gain control of the Senate, and maybe not even then if they don't get a large enough majority. I'm afraid we're still looking at something. If we don't go to sequestration, we will go to hopefully cuts that are not quite as draconian as the ones that were put forward by the super committee.
Yeah, but there's really no reason to believe that it will be other than the cuts that have been put forward, or at least that have been put into place in the absence of a successful outcome of the super committee.
The only thing that I think would convince the president and his colleagues in Congress to make a change would be what they would call a national emergency. And, you know, looking at what's happening with the unity government in Israel, that might be the first place we'd look.
It may be. Fred Grandy, thank you, as always, for your insights and for the terrific work you do at the Center for Security Policy. Keep it up, and we'll look forward to talking with you again inside the cloakroom, perhaps, and certainly in our weekly roundup next week. Until then, be well, my friend. Next up, we will talk with Mackenzie Eaglin. Get into a bit more of what the implications are for the military if these sequestration cuts are not put aside. Straight ahead. We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
My name is Sunday Hollis, and I totally lost the cravings for sweets. I totally lost the cravings for bread, even meat. And some people, you know, you would see people say, well, you're eating a salad because you're trying to diet, but you just don't have a taste for any of the junk anymore. And it is so, so, so true. Now, I'm thinking this is something that the celebrities are using. They're just not giving the meta system the credit for it. I've tried everything under the sun, and this is the only product that I have even called the company and asked them, could I sell it for them? This is a product where you can actually use the word awesome. I mean, and it is the whole essence of the word awesome.
Don't wait another minute to start losing weight. Call Judy Singer's The Meta System at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit shariathethreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
We can halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back joined by Mackenzie Eaglin. She is perhaps better known for her previous incarnation than her present one, but I'm delighted to say she continues to grow in responsibility and prominence in the Washington firmament. She is currently with the American Enterprise Institute, previously with the Heritage Foundation. Prior to that, worked in Capitol Hill and in the Pentagon and elsewhere in our government, trying in every stage of her career to ensure that we promote and practice peace through strength. She is a valued colleague, and it's always great to have her with us. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes with us, Mackenzie Eaglin, specifically to update us on what is happening with respect to this so-called sequestration exercise and the implications that you think it will have, and we all should recognize it will have, for our military and the ability to practice peace through strength.
Thanks, Frank, for having me. You know, Washington is at a standstill. You already know this. We've been this way for years. The Senate hasn't passed a budget in over 1,000 days, and this is contributing to kind of problems that have been created, like sequestration, which is basically blind, automatic, hair-triggered defense cuts. And this comes on top of the Obama administration's defense budget cuts over the last in previous 2 years. But now we have this debt ceiling deal that was hastily agreed to last year, and the super committee failed, and they couldn't find additional savings. And so we literally have a gun at the head of the military. And what it means is there's this automatic $500 billion in additional military cuts. And it's a problem. It's a big problem for the military. And what's so ironic is that Washington has created this problem. And it has basically caused a situation where the U.S. military's funding and priorities, and frankly safety, is now pawn to a larger political fight about Bush tax cuts, really, in essence. It's about a couple of other tax expirations as well. But something that's so important and so critical and a fundamental priority of government is now caught up in a larger political fight, and Congress is in no mood to solve this before the elections, and this is all set to take place in January.
Yeah. And Mackenzie Eaglin, there now is, I think, increasing evidence that they won't solve it after the election either, that in fact it's just too hard, especially in a finite window of a so-called lame duck session following the election prior to the convening of the new Congress. You gave us a wonderful briefing on Capitol Hill recently in which you enumerated, oh, I don't know what it was, a dozen other priorities that are all supposed to take place. It now sounds as though they're going to try to bring the Law of the Sea Treaty up, and maybe, who knows, the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty as well, in the hope of jamming everything through before there's some change yet to be determined. What does it mean right now?
You're right.
If we're not seeing those kinds of relief from the sequestration, let alone if it somehow is miraculously made in the December timeframe.
That's right. Congress is poising themselves, setting themselves up to not solve this in the lame duck, but they're pretending like they are now. And in the meantime, the Pentagon is not issuing any guidance to the military on what to do and how to plan. They're not issuing any guidance to our shipbuilding and aerospace manufacturing workforce out there in broader America and the companies that work on those programs. They're not issuing guidance to our depots that overhaul, you know, vehicles and other work for the military. So everybody's in limbo, waiting on Congress to act. And on top of it all, we have a president in the White House who's proposed no alternative to this outcome. In fact, his budget request and his spokesman have said he's already accounted for sequestration happening in his budget. So he's supporting sequestration. Harry Reid over in the Senate, he rules, the floor. He has said sequestration is a really tough pill to swallow. This week he said that. But you know what? We just got to swallow this bitter pill and move forward on debt reduction as if this was a Congress of debt reduction in the Senate side. Soft sequestration is already starting to take place in industry, in the military. Everybody's holding off on actions, things like buying the needed services and goods that the department needs. They're just going to continue to put that off until the end of the year in hopes that the cloud is lifted. And what we're going to see, of course, is just all of this snowballing as each month gets closer to January, and the consequences and the furloughs, the job loss, will grow between now and then.
Yeah. Mackenzie Eaglin is our guest. Of course, as I hope you all know, she is now with the American Enterprise Institute. She is the author of innumerable terrific articles and essays on this subject and has contributed mightily, both in her present incarnation and previous ones, to our understanding of what's going on here. And Mackenzie, you introduced a couple of concepts that I just want to drill down on. Soft sequestration is one of them. Another is the idea that, well, someone will blink and give at least Leon Panetta the discretion to selectively apply rather than in an across-the-board fashion these cuts. Somehow, again, miraculously, there will be a broader relief. Paul Ryan in the House of Representatives and now the House, full House, have adopted legislation that would provide at least a year's relief. No evidence, as you say, that that'll go forward in the Senate. But give us a flavor of what it actually means to the national security of the United States, to the security of the people of the United States, if we wind up seeing our industrial base dissipated, our forces hollowed out, and perhaps the all-volunteer force itself cratered in the process.
The bottom line, Frank, is this process would turn our military into one that looks just like everyone else's. Right now, we are a global military. It's what makes our military unique. we can go anywhere at any time with impunity. And we can be in two places at once with significant firepower if we needed to do that. This basically makes us a one war capable power. And that's what the rest of the world has, in sort of developed countries in many cases. And we would have strategic parity with other militaries, which flies in the face of the contract we have with our men and women in uniform that we really don't want to send you into a fight, but if we do, it shouldn't be fair. We will take that away from our service members, from their families, from our nation, a nation not prepared to incur this kind of risk in warfare or even deterrence. And that's the fundamental outcome.
And deterrence is the key point here, because what you just said might sound to some ears, and I know you don't mean it this way, Mackenzie Lynn, is, well, you know, we want to be adventurous. We want to be able to throw our weight around. The point of this exercise, as I said earlier, is promoting peace through strength. It's ensuring that we don't have to fight wars because people don't take on folks who are dramatically superior, which is what we have been for so much of the past several decades. And what you're saying, I guess, in as many words, is that isn't on anymore. We will be perhaps not just at parity, but maybe even inviting people to calculate that they can safely aggress against us or our interests or allies, at least.
I was at an event last week, and an Air Force B-2 bomber pilot was presenting, and one of our most capable, stealthy, and lethal assets in the United States inventory, and it's a significant component to our conventional deterrence. And what he said was, you never know when you're winning deterrence, and that's exactly right. That's the whole point. We can't count all of the conflicts and wars we've avoided or haven't been, you know, gotten involved in because we've had these assets, but we will be able to count without them the things we've been dragged into unnecessarily. And that's the kind of, those are the kind of metrics I don't want to add up. I would much rather keep what we have.
Yeah. This is the historical perspective you bring to this subject, Mackenzie, that I think is so indispensable. The costs to the nation of fighting wars that are unnecessary and might have been prevented by maintaining a credible, capable, deterring national security posture always exceed, especially in lives, not just treasure, but lives, the putative savings for going down this road of peace dividends or whatever we're calling this now, sequestration, budget deficit discipline, what have you. Mackenzie, we have to let you go, and I hope that as this thing continues to, well, unfold, unravel is probably a more accurate word, we can continue to call upon you, because the work you're doing at the American Enterprise Institute, and I'm very happy to say as part of our Coalition for the Common Defense, in inspiring those of us who need these insights to action, and hopefully giving members of Congress who represent all of us a map to get off of this this train wreck. It's just incalculably important. So we appreciate what you do so much. Look forward to talking with you again soon, and keep it up in the meantime.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And next up, we will be talking with General Jack Keane, one of the guys who's been through a hollow military before and who's going to tell us what it's like and what it will mean to you if we get back into it. Straight ahead.
To SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it. At www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope and life. www.waterforcongo.com.
In 1966 in Anchorage, Alaska, a talented child was born. He would go on to be one out of only 11 Alaskans to make it to the major leagues. The odds of him striking out more than 3,000 hitters? 1 in 33 million. The odds of this pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fast-balling philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism is getting closer to home. From 1 in 5,000 only 20 years ago, today 1 in 110 children are diagnosed. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
What are you doing?
Filling out a loan application.
I can help you get approved, you know.
Really? How?
With this.
A bag of sand?
It's not a bag. It's a pouch. And it's not sand. It's credit fairy dust.
Credit fairy dust?
Yes. I sprinkle some fairy dust on the application, and your credit rating magically improves.
There's no such thing as the credit fairy.
An unbeliever now. But what will you think when your loan is approved?
I'll think my credit score improved because I paid my bills on time, kept my credit card balances low, and only opened a new card if I really needed it.
It's the dust.
It's sand.
Don't deny the credit fairy.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Well, this is one of my favorite segments of the program ever, and that is our conversations periodically with General Jack Keane, former Vice Chief of Staff of the United States Army, a man who served his country with great distinction in uniform, but has rendered really incalculably important service since leaving the United States military. He has done so in private citizen's capacity, but as a confidant and advisor to many who are still in government, in uniform, particularly, I think, can be credited with having helped really turn around Iraq at a critical moment by advocating and helping to execute the surge that that President Bush quite courageously adopted at his recommendation. General Keane, welcome back. It's always good to have you with us, though I must say that the things that I want to talk with you about are not particularly happy. Let's start with the proposition that we heard out of a senior State Department official a couple of weeks ago to the effect that the war on terror is over. Subsequently, you know, walked back a bit by John Brennan, the Homeland Security Advisor, but how could anybody actually say such a thing, let alone want the rest of us to believe it?
That's an outrageous statement and quite irresponsible when we know full well a couple of things. One is we certainly have hurt the al-Qaeda. There's no doubt about that. We've hurt their leadership infrastructure. We've been very persistent with them and unrelenting, and it's had some dramatic impact on their ability to have the kind of global reach they had or to sustain something like that. All that said, this is a belief system and an ideology that's part of a huge political movement, and they are not giving up. even though they're hurt. And they've got an al-Qaeda movement going on the Arabian Peninsula, focused around Yemen, to be sure. And we still got a heck of a movement inside of Pakistan. The number two guy, Zawahiri, is still out there. And there's a new leadership structure almost in place as fast as we're able to eliminate it. And their focus still, in terms of their goals and objectives, is to target the United States, to kill U.S. citizens, so that we eventually pull out of the region and they can impose their ideology on that region as a start point. And that none of that has changed. The ideology hasn't changed. Their objectives have not changed in support of that ideology. So we're very much engaged, and we will be engaged with radical Islam in general. In this case, this element, the jihadist element of it, the al-Qaeda, for years to come.
I'm struck by the way you put that, that this is an ideology. I think of it as Sharia, is the word that they kind of use to describe it. It is clearly subscribed to by al-Qaeda, the al-Qaeda core, as the administration likes to call it. But you're absolutely right, of course, that there are many other both al-Qaeda franchises, as they've been called, and non-franchises that are engaged in advancing the same jihadist agenda. General, as you look at Pakistan and at neighboring Afghanistan, and with your close connection to the guys who are still trying to hold the line there, or more to the point, defeat the Taliban, I guess, how are we doing, as you see it at the moment, on the ground, and where do you see it going from here in Afghanistan?
You know, I did an assessment there for Generals Allen and Mattis back in January, and I stay current on Afghanistan. I mean, we're doing so much better than what's being reported back here. The fact of the matter is we've turned things around in the south and southwest, in Kandahar province and in Helmand province, and this is very critical because this is the birthplace of the Taliban. This is the strongest aspect of their hold on the country, other than the fact when they were running the entire country for a number of years, you know, prior to 9/11. And so they came back last year to try to take back what they had lost, and they did not get a single piece of territory, nor do they have control and influence over a population which they had lost. Now, we're going to transition in the south and southwest to the Afghan security forces here this summer and fall, respectively. And we're going to find out for sure whether our judgment is right that they can take over from us. They'll be in the lead. Now, we'll still be there. We'll be supporting, but we'll be supporting with much less forces. But here's our problem, Frank. I mean, the fact of the matter is the president has made a decision to pull all of the surge recovery forces out by September. That was over the objections of General Petraeus, who was the on-scene commander at the time, and who made a recommendation to the president to keep those forces, most of them, in place well into 2013. That's not happening. So the price we're paying for that is we are transitioning to the Afghan security forces in the south and southwest more rapidly than we would have. That's number one. So there is some risk here. Number two is the east is the campaign that we want to dominate. And we just will not have the force generation to have that kind of domination, I believe, that we had in the south and southwest, because those forces will not be there. That campaign is kicking off now and will really be in full swing in this fighting season, but also in 2013. And we're going to take 33,000 forces out. And so the campaign in the east is going to be somewhat at risk. In addition to that, there's two other decisions we've got to look at that the administration is going to make. What is the size and scale of the residual force? And will the president agree with the on-scene commander's recommendation? The fact of the matter is he's never agreed with an on-scene commander's recommendation. He didn't agree with Petraeus's and McChrystal's recommendation for the initial size of the surge force. They wanted 40 as a minimum. They got 30, 25% less. That's 30,000 versus 40,000. I just spoke to you about overruling Petraeus on when and how much of the surge recovery force should come out. The third one was General Alston, the on-scene commander in Iraq, who recommended a force of 26,000 to stay in Iraq, and the final answer was nothing. So a recommendation is coming forward from General Allen and General Mattis for a force probably, I mean, I don't ask them because I don't want to have that kind of information. and I think it's their business, but my judgment would be somewhere around 20,000, and we'll see what the decision comes out of the White House, whether they're going to support that recommendation. If they don't, then Afghanistan will be at risk.
Yeah. We're talking with General Jack Keane, former Vice Chief of Staff of the United States Army, and a man who has been following very closely, as you've been hearing, how the on-scene commanders are coping with their present, challenges from the Taliban and challenges from the White House. General Keane, let me ask you about a particular phenomenon that we've been visiting about with our guests frequently here, and I'm sure it's of concern to you as well, and that is this, I don't know what else to call it, but treachery of some of the Afghans that we are training and working with and supposedly expected to hand off to. Are the so-called green-on-blue attacks by such Afghans a function, in your estimation, of the Taliban's skill in infiltrating their adherents into the ranks and, you know, simply pulling the trigger when the opportunity presents itself? Or do you think at least some of these are people who are deciding that under the circumstances, and you've just described them pointedly, they may be on the wrong side of this and better line up with the Taliban, get right with them, if only to save their families from what will come if these guys actually prevail when we put Afghanistan at risk?
Well, most of it is because they really are ideologically aligned with the Taliban. You know, either they were recruited to put in that purpose, or they were recruited after they had already joined. And the Taliban's a very intimidating, terrorizing organization. I mean, they use the intimidation of family to get somebody to work for them. And, you know, I think it's rarely is it the case. I mean, you know, for the first time, they actually have a wage scale that's decent. They're inside the Afghan National Security Forces. If they're in the army, it's prestigious. So I think there's a lot of positive things going on for the overwhelming majority of the members of these security forces. And so for a person like that to be turned to the Taliban, I think that's the least of what is really happening here. Because the truth is, the Afghan National Security Forces, the army has an 85% approval rating by the people in the country. And the police now are up to 65%, up from the lows of 30. The Taliban has consistently, every single year, has somewhere between 80 and 90% disapproval from the people. They do not want them back.
General Keane, we have to leave it at that. Thank you so much for your past public service, as well as what you're doing now in your post-military career. We appreciate tremendously your help in clarifying so many of these issues, and keep coming back to us, sir. Next up, Bill Gertz with the Washington Free Beacon joins us. He'll take us inside the ring. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy. Eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful, all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
In Washington, Hugh Hewitt has the diagnosis.
They don't understand the need for speed.
Oh, we'll get to it. Don't worry. We'll get it done. Open amendment process, blah, 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 blah.
Not in the least bit clued in to the sense of urgency, but I don't think the Beltway is.
I'm just beginning to think it is a Beltway disease.
Kind of an invisible wall separates them from what the people think.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone. At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff, like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We are visiting with Bill Gertz, one of the high points of our week here. He gives us an insight into the backstory behind what goes on inside the ring, as he calls it, at the Washington Times, where he writes a fantastically important column. He's also a senior editor at the Washington Free Beacon. And Bill, you have, as we speak, a major story on the Free Beacon about China and the possibility of open hostilities being precipitated by the Chinese here, perhaps in the very near future, against our friends and allies in the Philippines. Give us the story there. What's happening, and what role, if any, is the United States playing to support its ally?
Well, it's a very unusual situation. About a month ago, a group of some 8 to 10 Chinese fishing vessels kind of made a run at a disputed shoal called Scarborough Shoal. It's about 120 miles from the Philippines. It's claimed by both the Philippines, China, and a couple other nations. And the Philippines responded by sending a Coast Guard patrol boat to arrest the fishermen, which in turn was then confronted by two Chinese, what they call maritime protection ships, which are armed. And the standoff has ensued from that point, and the rhetoric coming from Beijing is extremely hostile, to the point where the military newspaper was basically calling for a war with the Philippines, which, by the way, has a mutual defense treaty going back to 1951 with the United States. And yet the Obama administration has failed to back its ally. It's a very unusual step. They've taken a neutrality position. They have not dispatched 7th Fleet warships to send a show of force to its ally. And the message being sent to Beijing is one of weakness, vacillation, and appeasement.
Right. In fact, as I understand it, Bill Gertz, they've ordered Pacific Command to stand down, not to provide such support. You know, it seems to me, Bill, that we're sort of seeing the Marine Corps motto turned on its head, that we have the Marines hold no better friend, no worse enemy. It seems that the Obama administration is determined to impress upon friends and allies alike that you can have no worse friend in the United States and certainly no better enemy. The Chinese aren't terribly likely to mistake the signal being sent here. Do you think that may actually catalyze this thing into open hostilities? Bill Gertz?
The people that I've talked to are very worried that the Chinese are going to take some type of military action very soon. One likely course of action would be to do what they have done against the Vietnamese. And there's video of this online where they've pictures of Chinese gunboats machine gunning Vietnamese fishermen in disputed waters on the other side of the South China Sea. So things are getting very hot. And I wanted to make the point here. Last year, when the Chinese and the Japanese had a run-in over another disputed island, the Senkaku Islands, which are further north in the East Sea, both the defense secretary and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff at that time, Gates and Mullen, came out and asserted that the U.S. had a close defense relationship with Japan. In the case of the Philippines, they're not doing that. They're saying that this is we're not getting involved in the South China Sea dispute. And this is a really, in my view, dangerous step because it's sending the wrong signal. We had the Chinese defense minister was just visiting this week. And again, the Pentagon claims that the defense secretary made clear to him that they don't want the Chinese to use force. But the Chinese seem to be unbounded by any kind of pressure from the United States.
Yeah, well, look, let's put a fine point on it. I think the Chinese are seeing that we are not going to intervene. What are the implications, Bill Gertz, for our security partnerships, not just with the Filipinos, but with others in the region and perhaps beyond? Are allies likely to recognize that we are not to be relied upon and perhaps in some cases maybe decide they need their own nuclear deterrent, for example, in order
to
protect themselves?
Well, that's clearly the direction that things are going. You know, the administration announced that it was going to do a pivot or a rebalancing to Asia, and yet we're not backing that up by building more ships, although the House Armed Services Committee this week sought to address that shortfall. But on the part of the administration, there seems to be a lack of will to assert American leadership over this region, which is one of the most strategic waterways in the world, because the South China Sea is where a huge amount of international shipping passes, resources coming from the Middle East to the burgeoning Asia region.
Right, and for that matter, I think to our own shores as well. This is a strategic waterway in every sense of the word. Bill, this week we had Leon Panetta and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff rolled out as part of a dog and pony show under the auspices of something called the American Sovereignty Campaign, one of the most, I think, outlandish misappropriations of a term, sovereignty, by a group of special interests, unfortunately, including the United States Navy, that are keen to have the Law of the Sea Treaty ratified and claim that somehow that's compatible with sovereignty when it's, I think, anything but. But, Bill, to the extent that you're talking with people inside the Pentagon, are you hearing from them that this whole business of possible hostilities between the Chinese, who are members of the Law of the Sea Treaty, as I think are the Filipinos, would somehow be better managed or a non-problem were we party to it as well?
No, I have not heard that. But it's clear that this model of relying on international agreements that are abided by the United States and the democracies of the world, but are ignored by communist governments and rogue states like China, This is part of their approach to world affairs. They want to constrain the U.S., and it's clear that this Law of the Sea Treaty, which has a tribunal for this thing, already is not working, because the Chinese have said that they will not discuss the dispute in an international forum. And they frequently refer to the U.S. as having gunboat diplomacy. And here you have the biggest example of gunboat diplomacy we've seen in decades.
Irony of ironies. Yeah, that's a classic example of the Chinese cheek. Bill, speaking of the House Armed Services Committee, as you know, they've been trying to address a number of problems, as has the full House of Representatives this week, yawning before us as a result of the defense budget cuts that President Obama has undertaken and engineered. There seems to be now pretty clearly teeing up a choice between the House of Representatives, which is trying to mitigate the damage that would be done by these sequestration cuts, as they're called, on the one hand, and the Democrats in the Senate and their allies in the executive branch, who seem quite prepared to see those cuts made, despite decrying what the effect would be. Where do you think this is likely to wind up, and what will the consequences be for the national security?
Devastating, I think, is the only way to describe it. This is playing out. We have a honest attempt by some true patriots in the House Armed Services Committee, led by Chairman Buck McKeon, who are trying to come to terms with the fact that our military is going to be devastated. And from the Pentagon and the military and the upper ranks of the military, we're hearing utter silence on this. There seems to be no preparation or no concern about what is happening. And, my feeling is that there are anti-military advocates at the upper levels of the Obama administration that want to see it. They want to see that cut and the devastation that it would inflict on the military.
It's really frightening. I think, in fairness, we have heard Leon Panetta, we have heard the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Marty Dempsey, and a few other senior military people at various moments decry this sequestration business, calling it catastrophic, calling it shooting ourselves in the head and that sort of thing. But, Bill, you're absolutely right. At the moment, there is yawning silence. And this is the moment that counts. We've got to see relief from these cuts. The Senate has got to follow the House's lead. The President has got to go along with it. And heaven help all of us if they don't do it. Bill Gertz, we will be following closely the implications of all of this and hopefully the corrective action through your writing at the Washington Times and the Washington Free Beacon, and I'm sure through the next book that will be coming down the pike among your bestsellers. Thanks so much for joining us, my friend. God bless you. Keep up the good work, and we'll talk with you again next week. We'll talk with the rest of you again, I hope, as well, next week. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.